Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Edition on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Ellen Lockyer. Today we'll be talking about the aftermath of the Anchorage election and its results, results that were surprising to some. Joining us today are Anchorage School Board Chair Eric Croft. Hi. And pollsters Mark Helenthal of Helenthal and Associates and Ivan Moore with Ivan Moore Research. So let's get down to it. And first, I'd like to start with the school bond issue, since it was successful from the ASD's point of view, very successful, 53% of the vote. But voters approved the bonds with the 53% of the vote, as I said. And what does that tell you about the city's commitment to schools, Eric Croft?
I think it's, given the uncertainty around debt reimbursement, it says a lot that Anchorage voters continue to be very supportive of their local schools. We've gone through periods where they've failed. Generally, then we come back, we restructure them, we maybe reduce some. But it's a nice vote for support for our schools.
Well, back in 2006, I think, was the last time a bond proposal failed. That's a while ago.
There was a period in 2006, and then again in 9, 10, and 11. We even didn't put a bond proposal on the ballot in 10 because of the failure in 9 and sort of regrouping. We've had a consistent policy for at least the last 5, maybe longer years, of only putting a new proposal for the debt we retire. And I think Anchorage likes that discipline too. The municipality's been doing the same thing. So in effect, we're living on a 20-year diet. We're 20 years ago, we passed bonds that are retiring this year, and we're only putting on new bonds to do that. I think that was a good selling point.
Okay, and the recent package, what schools will be affected by that or helped
right,
by that?
So four big projects and then four smaller ones. So Gladiswood Elementary, Mountain View, Turnagain, and Rabbit Creek were big renovations. Turnagain still has cracks from the earthquake, which I was just barely here, on my way here when that happened. And then West, East, Fire Lake Elementary and Inlet View Elementary had some smaller additions.
Okay.
I think we learned long ago to do it based on need. From my perspective, this is, having seen the legislative process and other processes, this is one of the better capital process. It has public buy-in with the votes. It also has a public committee that sets it, and it's done more on the merits and numbers than backroom Senate finance deals.
Okay, and Mark Helenthal, we've been talking about these bonds. How do they affect an election, first of all? Is there a link?
Well, I really don't think so. If you look back at the 2006, that's when Begich won and beat Frost by a considerable number, yet the bonds failed. So you would think that a liberal mayor, if they were linked, would carry the bonds with them, where a conservative mayor would carry the no vote. And that doesn't appear to be the case if we look historically. I think regardless of your political persuasion, people are interested in quality education. They want their kids educated, even if they're Republicans, Democrats, etc. And they're willing to pay for it.
Okay, does the city's bond rating help?
Cost of borrowing money is lower. And that helps quite a bit.
Right. And is there a burden on the taxpayers to this particular package of bonds that just passed?
Well, there's always a burden on the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. It's not a free lunch. But incrementally, the burden isn't that high on most taxpayers. On some it is. If you're at the bottom rung of the ladder, even small increases in your property taxes are noticed.
Okay. And Ivan Moore, here's one for you as a pollster. Last week, just before the Anchorage election, it was unclear still if the city bond package would gain the state reimbursement of, what, 70%? Yet the early voters, according to the trend, did vote for the bond package. Mm-hmm. What do you see in that?
Well, it was definitely a blow. I was working on the School Bonds Yes campaign, which is the independent campaign that gets together every year and pushes the school bonds. And when debt reimbursement, which has been a core plank of our message in recent years and helped sell the bonds, that, you know, for every dollar that we put in, state government puts in $2, was gone, was essentially not going to be there as an issue. And that gave us the opportunity to really use an issue that I, for a long time, have thought that is really important, and that's the debt retirement that you mentioned, the fact that the school district has had this consistent amount of bond amount for the last 4 years, basically between $55 and $60 million steady, and that's picked as the amount because it's the amount, on average, that the school district retires in old bond debt every year. And we had to break this paradigm that voting for bonds every year just puts property taxes up and up and up, and there's no end to it, and the school district wastes our money, without recognizing that old bond debt is falling off at the same pace. So everything's a wash. And that essentially we can vote for this even without reimbursement and not put our property taxes up. And that was the message we used, and it really, I was thrilled. I wasn't actually expecting the bonds to pass. I knew that there was a chance that they would, but I was thrilled that they did.
Especially in this time of reduced fiscal fortunes. But how else does the bond package actually help save money, for instance, on a deferred maintenance?
Oh, I think that wasn't something that was really used in media efforts, either by School Bonds Yes or by the school district. But I think it's something that people commonly recognize, that maintenance now saves much bigger costs potentially later on when the roof falls in.
Right. Well, let's get to the postmortem on the mayoral race, because the outcome, I think, shook a lot of people up. So, Ivan Moore, again, what is the outcome of the election telling us about who is voting? Is that a fair question?
Oh, I don't think there's really any way of telling. Berkowitz won quite comfortably, like in the first go-around. Now we've got to do the runoff. That was no surprise, though, because he had the strongest numbers. He's been around for a long time. And really, it was a race between the other three. And when I polled 2 weeks out, Berkowitz was up in the 30s, and then Coffey, Hal Crow, and Dembowski were like dead level, each of them on 16%. And I think what happened in the last week or two is that powers that be on the right, whoever those powers that be, kingmakers, whatever you want to call them, were, sat down and said, we got to support someone because Coffey and Dembowski are splitting the conservative vote, and at this rate, Hal Crow and Berkowitz are going to get into the runoff. We need to jump on someone's back and decide which horse we're going to push, and that was Amy. And for the last week or 10 days, the establishment, the talk show hosts, the writers, all got in concert behind Amy, which was unfair on Dan, I thought, who has been in this town a long time, done a lot of good work.
Well, or we really like a good-looking woman with a gun on her.
Something like that.
Dan self-imploded. I mean, it was real clear. He was within, on our polls, 2% of Berkowitz, and then he threatened all the media, and that didn't go over well. lawyers sue, is that evidently, and that was simply a huge, huge, gigantic mistake. Amy, at the end, got three articles in three consecutive days from the Dispatch. So you could argue that the Dispatch, which is somewhat perceived as somewhat liberal, put Amy in the runoff to avoid a Hal Crow Berkowitz runoff, because Hal Crow was Berkowitz's main fear. The fear would be that Hal Crow Republican, the Republicans would hold their nose, vote for Hal Crow, and he could beat Berkowitz.
I was getting at, and let's stick with Mark Helenthal here, is the old order sort of fading into the background? Coffey and Hal Crow have been around a long time. So has Berkowitz, actually. But Berkowitz has been out of politics for quite a number of years. And Amy's sort of the newcomer, fresh face. Does that say something is resonating with voters? Maybe you mentioned Coffey's
Amy, because she really didn't have much experience and the like, is a fresh face, new. And that's how you package yourself. Is that resonating more? No, I don't think so. It certainly, until Coffey self-imploded, that really we didn't notice it in any of our polls or anything else. Every election is distinct. Now, why did Berkowitz do well? He was the only Democrat. He was three Republicans and Berkowitz. It was kind of the mirror opposite of 6 years before when Croft was
flashbacks I'm having, but yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay,
you can see him twitch a little bit.
Yeah. But,
where Sullivan was the only Republican, so he ended up winning hands down the Republican side. Eric managed to pull off the Democratic side, but he was flat broke. There's a parallel here. Amy's flat broke. And we were handling Sullivan, and Sullivan had $135,000 in the bank, which we saved for a runoff.
Right, but you did.
And Berkowitz has got a large amount in the bank.
Right, but you did mention that Amy Dombrowski got herself in the dispatch about three times right before the election. There was the sign defacing incident in which she confronted the fellow who
then
was.
The video.
The video of it. And pistol
then,
pack
and then,
of mama.
Then, well,
the,
that was the third one. It was just, the first one was that her signs were being defaced. Everybody's signs are being defaced all the time, and that's hardly, usually you don't get an article on that, especially the last 3 days. And that article ran. Then she had a video of catching the guy, and then she announced for the third one, the new wrinkle was that she was packing a piece.
So and Mr. Moore, yeah.
That kind of last-minute free media can be really, instrumental.
Right.
I mean, I don't necessarily buy the concept of Dan Coffey imploding. Certainly he made some mistakes, but the poll that I did about 2 weeks out had Coffey's negative at 33 and Dombrowski's negative at 31. She hasn't done herself any good by getting endorsed by the group out in the valley, and has made a couple of other mistakes that have, I mean, certainly a lot of that negative is going to be negative from the left that immediately identifies her as being in opposition to them. But the important thing was that Coffey's negative, like I said, these kingmakers that I talked about earlier, looked at that as being pretty ossified and immutable, whereas Dombrowski, much more of a blank canvas.
But Ivan Moore, interrupting. Let's get to the money. Dan Coffey had by far the largest war chest, and he started his campaign like forever ago, whereas Dombrowski did not have the big bucks, yet she still trumped two conservatives and came
one,
out
one
on top.
Yeah.
Well, I have trouble counting to two.
Exactly.
But okay.
You know, really, it was two and two. It wasn't three and one. I mean, if you looked at the first choice, second choice, Berkowitz votes, half the people that were voting for Berkowitz had Hal Crow in second, and vice versa with people that were voting for Hal Crow. Berkowitz was in second most of the time. And Coffey and Dombrowski were similarly paired over on the right. So Andrew's an anomaly. Just because he's a Republican, he's actually much more of a liberal than he is a Republican.
Right. I think he's stated he's not going to throw his support behind either Berkowitz or Dombrowski. He's sort of sticking to the middle of the road.
He hasn't thrown it yet.
Yeah.
Well, that's true. He may.
At the moment. Yeah.
But
yeah.
How would that maybe skew the election if he had thrown his support behind somebody? The upcoming May 5th runoff.
For the next one. I mean, this
runoff. The next one, yeah.
It's somewhat surprising if he threw his support before the last
one. You know, to go back to your question about the money, it was a huge imbalance. I mean, Coffey was by far and away, certainly amongst the three, Coffey, Hal Crow, and Dombrowski, who were battling for second place. Raised almost $400,000. I don't know what Dombrowski's end total was, but it was probably a fifth of that, and she won. And, you know, it's an old adage that 90% of the campaigns that raise the most money end up being the campaigns that win. Frankly, that's a misnomer, because most of the time the ones that raise the most money are the incumbents, and the incumbents win. But sometimes 10% of the time it doesn't happen. And especially in a race like this where it's going to a runoff and someone's getting into the runoff with 20 and a little bit percent, there's an opportunity for surprises to happen.
I don't know all that happened, but it, some combination of what these two wise men have said. But I remember meeting with Dan Coffey early, and the conversation was all about sort of the influential people that he'd convinced to be on his side or how much money he raised. And I think that's always dangerous in politics to assume that it's an insider game, and it always sets alarm bells off for me now that they're missing something. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Mr. Helenthal here. We are headed for a runoff election on May 5th between Ethan Berkowitz and Amy Dombrowski. Do runoffs draw more voters to the polls in your experience?
All polls, are the people that vote have to be motivated to vote. And if they're not motivated to vote, then they have low turnout. If they're motivated, a higher turnout. And it comes down to, it's very important that Ethan and Amy both motivate their constituents to vote. Amy has a bit of a advantage because a lot of the motivation comes from the pulpit on her side, and not so much on Ethan's side. And the demographics favor Amy. We're basically roughly 32% Republican if you divide the pie, 18% Democrat, 50% undeclared or nonpartisan. And that gives an advantage to a Republican. We're a conservative, when self-identified city. So that doesn't mean Amy wins, hands down. Amy's biggest problem right now is she's broke. And she cannot put her own money in. She's not allowed to self-fund at the moment. And Berkowitz has a lot of money on hand. But her advantage is the demographics and how and what position she uses to rally that demographic. Typically, we're a nonpartisan race, but Amy has made it very partisan from the get-go as far as touting that she was the true Republican.
Right, but now we have a clear distinction between two candidates instead of the whole thicket of mayoral candidates.
What I'm suggesting is if the race is a clear distinction between two candidates, Amy will be our next mayor.
I disagree.
Would you
with
put
that.
Money on well, that, Mr. Moore?
If it's decided on who's the Democrat, who's the Republican, who's the liberal, who's the conservative, if we're gonna make those the distinctions, absolutely for sure she'll win because the conservatives outnumber the Republicans almost 2-1, or outnumber liberals almost 2-1, and Republicans have a tremendous advantage.
Well, Ivan Moore, you disagree.
I disagree totally because moderates are not in the middle. If you have a race between candidate A and candidate B, candidate A is the conservative, and you've got, as Mark says, 32% Republican or conservative, however you want to break it down, and that's 2-1 over the liberal. Fine. The conservatives will vote for the conservative candidate, the liberals will vote for the liberal candidate, or at least 95% of them will.
56% self-identify as conservative.
And then the 50% of the middle tend to go with the candidate on the left, particularly in a race where everything is equal, the middle leans left.
There's
and that's why
56% of the electorate identifies themselves as conservatives.
However,
56 always wins.
True, maybe. But what I'm trying to get at is a lot of the old order is slipping away. We have a new Alaska, we have new people, we have a whole changing generation of how people think, how people vote.
Is Anchorage more moderate? Is she right? Is it moderating over the last 20 years?
Very slightly, not really that much at all. We still are look at the demographic statewide, too. We just went through an incredibly expensive U.S. Senate race, and the advantage is always to a conservative in our state. We're a conservative state.
But look at the Alaska Dispatch today. They had an article on Berkowitz and Dembowski's attitudes toward bicycle
Who do you think won
transportation. Well, I'm not going to say that. I'm just saying if 5 years ago, even 10 years ago, would a bicycle issue have won an election?
No, of course
not.
And it's a legitimate constituency now. And Dembowski lost just about every bicycle vote, at least amongst the ones who are watching.
Tremendously on fiscal conservatives, though, don't want to spend their money on little plows going down the sidewalk.
Didn't she have them from get-go? Didn't she have them from the beginning?
The bicycle?
No, the fiscal conservatives that...
Well, she still has to pander to. Remember, they're 56%. Yeah. So it's not like it's a small little teeny wedge. The bicycle riders are a small wedge. I think we could probably, if we sat down and brainstormed, come up with most of their names.
Well, Eric, you want to weigh in on this? On your bicycle, no, not on bicycles,
well,
but
no, I do,
you have opinion on this.
These guys have been doing more of the numbers, but it does feel like Anchorage is growing up and moderating. And Amy's defined the gay issue or gay rights issues as central to her campaign. That has moved tremendously over the last 10 years, from a overwhelming vote on the constitutional amendment to closer and closer to 50%. I'm not sure that's the reliable winner that it has been in the past for conservatives.
Another one that's moved considerably too, and that's abortion. It used to be 70-30 pro-choice to pro-life. Now it's almost 50-50. The pro life people vote you up and down on the issue because you're killing babies. That's their
term. And then, of course, another one that's moved tremendously in recent years is the marijuana initiative, and she was instrumental in trying to overthrow the will of the people and get Anchorage to opt out just months after voters in this town had voted in favor.
That one really hasn't moved. In 1980, marijuana. But
what I'm liking to get at is 2 years ago, there wasn't a marijuana issue. 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, Anchorage could not get a gay rights, a civil rights clause for gays in the city law books. But now we have gay marriage. It has changed so quickly, so fast. And I think a lot of the older voters are a little bit stupefied.
Well, one of the things that's interesting is young folks in Anchorage and in Alaska generally. One of the things I noticed years ago was that the old adage that people are born liberal and they go through a period of moderation in middle age and then become cranky old conservatives when they get later on in life is actually doesn't back up. When you look at the age distribution of whether people identify as conservatives or liberal by age, there is a tendency for people to get more conservative. But when you get down to the young end, it actually turns back up. There's actually quite a few conservatives and Republicans who are in that kind of 18 to 29 age group. Maybe it's kind of a second generation of the people that came here in the 70s, a kind of second bubble kind of coming through. Or maybe it's just a trend. I mean, I've talked to young people who say, yeah, a bunch of my friends are Republicans. And I say, how is that? I mean, aren't they supposed to start off? And even with issues like marijuana and gay marriage, I mean, you got young people saying, yeah, gay marriage, what's the big deal?
Right.
You know? Yet you've still got this tendency for them to identify as conservative Republican. Maybe it's being like their parents or whatever. So you don't actually see the makeup of the population changing that much. I don't, anyway.
How about you, Mark Hollenthal?
Well, on the gay issue, gay rights will simply win as a function of age. The people that are against it are dying off, and the new, regardless of whether they call themselves conservatives, liberals, or whatever, are overwhelming. When my daughter's ages, it doesn't make any difference. Everybody's in favor of gay rights. But when you get to the old folk, that is simply isn't true. So, like I said, almost like Darwin will take care of that one. And also, that issue really, I expect, and I think most, you're a lawyer with a law degree, the Supreme Court is going to rule in favor of gay marriage. That's the general consensus. 30 states have approved it. That's the way the court kind of likes things to go when they make social change, as it were. And so this issue will be less of an issue in 5 years than it is now.
You know, conservative encompasses a lot. I know so many people, met another one today, who say, I want to be fiscally conservative and socially liberal or progressive,
sure.
Whatever they're...
That's a Democrat.
Well, I think that's an emerging... So the question becomes, does Amy get more traction out of the fiscal aspects or the social aspects?
You know, I think we've got to break this paradigm as well, because let's face it, the Republicans have been down in Juneau and they've spent like drunken sailors for the last 4 or 5 years. Now they're all running around with their heads, chickens like chickens with their heads cut off, saying, oh my God, what do we got to do? We got to cut. Why weren't you being the fiscal conservatives like you advertised yourself as being when you went down there?
I just got in this fight with some former friends from the legislative days saying, we've cut more in the Anchorage School District with 5,000 employees.
ASD's in great shape.
Than you have cut with 20,000 employees at the state level. So don't lecture us, please.
You don't have an active lobbying group. Nobody's lobbying for less money.
Here's the school district and the school board in the capable hands of Democrat Eric Kropp.
Mr. Kropp.
And they've cut total debt by $200 million in the last
I'd like to get one
years.
Last question in, though.
If you can get a question.
What is a new administration going to mean for the school district?
Well, I think it's a key question, but instead of answering it, I'll put it back to the people. I think they, to the extent that Anchorage cares about education, and I agree with everyone here that it seems to, and this vote did that, you should ask both of them their plans for education and express how important you feel it is. So I'll let the candidates answer that. But I think this town continues, I agree with Mark, this town continues to value it, and this election will be important, so ask those candidates.
And that could be, again, part of the sort of changing face of Anchorage and maybe the changing demographic of Anchorage. I have a little time now for a wrap-up a comment from each of you. Mark Hollenthal, what are you predicting for May 5th?
It depends on how they position themselves. My fear is that it's, as we've talked about a little earlier, that it goes on very emotional, ideological grounds, on gay rights, on abortion, etc., which really the mayor has very little to do with. At and we get off topics that are important to Anchorage, and the election is decided on emotional, ideological issues.
Okay, Mr. Moore, you got a prediction?
I don't have a prediction, no. We've still got 3.5 weeks to go. But I hope that the thing doesn't come down to a mud fight about conservative, liberal, because, as I said, it's meaningless. The conservatives, neither the conservatives nor the Republicans have any reasonable claim to being fiscally conservative, nor are liberals the big spenders that they're Eric at the school district, that they're claimed to be. And so I hope it comes down to the other distinguishing factors like experience and how good a job they'll do how good they'll be for the business community, for education, how they'll sort out the police department and the problems
okay.
there.
Okay, thank you. That's all the time we've got this week. I'd like to thank my guests, Eric Croft, Ivan Moore, Mark Hellenthal. Thanks for listening to Anchorage Edition this week. We'll be back right here, same time, same station next week. And don't forget, get out and vote May 5th. You'll have a new mayor.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.